You're listening to the Drex Radio Show, live and local in the Bay and around the world at KGORadio.com. And welcome to the next generation of KGO podcast series. And Kelly Sullivan Walden is my guest. Thank you for joining me, Kelly.
Thank you for having me, Drex. It's always so wonderful and dreamy to be with you.
Oh, it is dreamy to be with you, too. And I love your book, The Love, Sex, and Relationship, The Dream Dictionary. And since this is a podcast, we can get a little bit naughty.
Oh, my God.
I don't have the FCC hanging over my head. So I want to go through some of the basic approach to dream work. And you said, I'll just mention some of these things. So everyone in your dream is you, you say.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Everyone in your dream is you. Carl Jung, the late great father of psychotherapy, that was his contribution. And I love that because I feel like that's one of my main pillars of dream interpretation. If we look at our dreams from that perspective, then we're 90% of the way there to figuring out what our dream is telling us. So the good news and the bad news about that is if we're dreaming about some big, beautiful, sexy stranger, the bad news is that it's not necessarily predictive that we're going to be meeting this big, sexy stranger. It means that we are that sexy stranger. It's an aspect of ourselves that we are intimately connecting with because it's important for us to do so given what's going on in our lives. So mostly our sexual dreams are not necessarily about sex at all. They're mostly about our psychological, spiritual need to connect with a deeper part of ourselves or connect with a part of ourselves that perhaps we've been estranged with or we haven't quite connected to before, and we need to do it in a deep way. And, of course, we do have a carnal need to blow off steam, and those dreams are wonderful for that. But mostly they're symbolic.
Well, and so to that point, everyone in your dream is you. So when I'm having a sexual dream, I'm dreaming, you know, it's the strangest thing. I dream about sexual escapades gone by, especially when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I think, and that's because the hormones were raging. And let me just tell you, and I think anybody, you know, I hit 50, and I don't want to say I peaked. I hope not, but yeah. But I mean, those were the times of my sexual life. So I will dream about experiences, but you're saying that's actually me.
It's you, and so it's not just who you're having sex with that counts. It does count, but it's also who were you back then that your subconscious mind feels it's important for you to reconnect with. So how in your life and why in your life would it be important for you to remember how vital and sexual and alive and juicy you were back then? How might that serve you in your current endeavors?
Well, I was horny as hell. But I think as we all grow older, we think about those things and thinking, wow, you know, when I look back on all of those sexual escapades, they sure were fun.
But it brings back that twinkle in our eye. It's kind of like when we're dealing with a dream, it's as if they like Einstein said that past, present, and future, it's all relative to the observer. And really, they're all happening simultaneously. In dreams, we jump back to the past, we jump to the future, and it brings us in, it takes all of that into present time. So it can bring, I mean, we could be 90 years old and remember a sexual dream or sexual experience from when we were 15 years old, and we, in our blood, I mean, if you took our pulse, if you checked our breathing, you would see a different pulse happening in that person, because it does bring you physiologically back into that vital energy. So there's something incredibly healthy and affirming and wonderful about this. It doesn't mean we're going to be 15 again, but we can have like a flavor of that waft into our current life and blend that into what's happening with us now. We can do that with any positive dream, not just with a sexual dream.
I was just reading some factoid that the average virgin loses his or her virginity at 24. I was thinking, what the hell have you been waiting for? 16 sounded correct to me. I remember having a lot of fun at 16. Yes.
Did I reveal that? Right.
Yeah. Well, okay. You know.
It is a podcast.
No, it is a podcast. I can say whatever I want. Hey, I wanted to run this by you because Us Magazine put this article out today, and they interviewed Tracy Morgan, or they did a story about Tracy Morgan, the comedian who almost died in that horrific car crash on the New Jersey Turnpike. Now, he said that he visited heaven while he was in his coma. He said he was talking to his dad. He had this green thing on, and I just remember him saying, I'm not ready for you, son, and I started crying so hard. And Morgan 47 recalled to Oprah Winfrey. And so I wonder, and I'm sure you hear these stories all the time. And what are your thoughts?
Well, you and I go here because I feel like this is an important place for you and I personally. And I think that this topic lends itself to a conversation about what's on the other side, because when we talk about dreams, we're pointing behind the veil to who are we really beyond just this physical flesh bag. That's a wonderful flesh bag, but we're more than that. And our dreams, every night we explore beyond the confines of our body. We have an experience of being more than that. And I think that, and I've had a death experience, you've had a death experience, and we've shared together. And I think that we could just talk about this for ever, that it's such a blessing to pierce that veil.
It is. I mean, and anybody who's gone through it will always know that it's safe and it's warm. Just briefly, if you don't know the story, I had a perforated duodenum last year, and I went septic, and I basically did die. But it wasn't, you know, I didn't see light, and I didn't see God or Jesus. I saw my relatives reaching their hands out to me and said, just, you know, welcome, come on, take my hand and come over, and it was safe. It was such a safe, serene feeling. So I know it's there. I mean, I consider that one of the greatest blessings of my life, because now I know how it ends.
Right. Or how it begins. I mean,
that's really well put. Yes.
Right. Because my death experience briefly was that I actually had a little bite of a hash brownie, and I'm a lightweight. I never do anything, and it literally took me. I went out of my body. I turned blue. I was on a stretcher. Paramedics put, you know, checking all my vitals, rushing me to the hospital because I had flatlined. I left my body, and meanwhile, while everyone is, pandemonium is breaking out in the Indian restaurant I was at in Santa Monica, and like it was complete pandemonium. But I was having a totally different experience. I was surrounded by complete beauty and bliss, and all the answers to every question I've ever had came rushing to me. And I didn't see any people. I didn't see any hands. No. But I was surrounded by, I felt like I was on a conveyor belt that was just taking me swiftly through veil after veil after veil of information, wisdom, love, kindness, beauty. And it was like I could see that there was no end, that it just kept going higher and higher. It was like that saying, from glory to greater glory to greater glory. Like there was no end to the bliss and to the love. And I did not want to leave to come back into my body. But because I did finally look on the other side of the veil and kind of look at all the drama, and I thought, and I tried so hard to communicate with everybody that was freaking out, especially my husband, like, please know that this is okay. This is the best thing ever. Don't worry. But there was no getting through to him. There was no way. And I knew for sure this would be one of the darkest days of his life, and this would be traumatic for everybody. And I thought, what a shame. What a shame. So I brought myself, I willed myself back into my body out of pure codependence, and so that I could reassure everybody that I was okay. And then I wanted to just go back along my merry way, but it was too late. It was like the door was closed and that was it.
Oh, yeah. Once you don't accept, then you're back.
But just like a dream, I can remember the feeling, just like you can remember the feeling. So there is a relationship between a near-death experience and a dream, because it does take us into another aspect of ourselves. Like, what do they say? It's a beyond ordinary. It's an extraordinary aspect of ourselves. And just like a flying dream or a great sex dream, we can remember it every day for the rest of our lives and be changed by that dream. We can be healed. We can be transformed by that dream. So I know every time I think about my death experience, I feel like it elevates me up a few notches. It takes me into a more peaceful place, and I do feel like that's where it begins. I feel like the death experience that we both experienced with all that love, that's just the tip of the iceberg, and there's so much more where that came from.
I'm speaking with Kelly Sullivan Walden. She is the author of The Love, Sex, and Relationship Dream Dictionary. It's fantastic. You'll love it. Anything to do with any subjects that has to do with sex or dreams, it's all in there. I just love it because I love this book because I like sit it on my coffee room table, or I sit it in the bookshelf, and people always walk over. You know how nosy Nancy's are. They'll walk over and say, what books you're reading? Oh, what's this one? Drex, Love, Sex, Relationships, and Dream Dictionary by Kelly Sullivan Walden. And then everybody wants to dig through it all the time because I think everybody wonders what the dreams are about, you know?
And there's a fun game that you can play with people, even if they say, oh, I don't remember dreams. You can just flip to a random page and you can pick a random dream symbol and know that that's kind of like an oracle. It's like a message for you. Should I do it for you, Drex? Should I do my little flipping through and seeing what your message is, or do you want to do it?
Sure. Would you like me to just open up a page and...
Yeah, you do it. Just pick a random page and move your finger around on the page until you just feel moved to stop.
Okay, let me see here. All right. Fat.
Fat?
Fat.
Okay, read it.
Fat. Okay. Dreams of fat or being fat can signify a need for safety to shield your vulnerability against criticism, rejection, overpowering energy, and emotional pain that you may be afraid or unwilling to feel. This dream might give you a warning or excessive, warn you about excessive or glutinous behavior so that you can avoid any destructive patterns that sabotage you from having the relationship that you most deeply desire. Now, to me, Kelly, that would mean to me, since I had all this surgery, I'm not allowed to gain weight or get fat. Because they rerouted the plumbing, I can't anyway. So that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So that also can represent some vulnerability. Like if you I think sometimes fat, I heard this great dream about this woman who had been obese for a long time and she was in a dream group specifically focused on getting the dreams to help figure out what the issue was. And she had a dream that she was floating down a river with an inner tube around her belly. And she kept bumping into all these things. And she knew underneath the inner tube she had an 18-inch waist. And when she woke up, she wrote that down. The person in the dream group that was helping them figure out what was going on said, have you ever had an 18-inch waist? Or was it a 28-inch waist? Anyway, it was a teeny waist. And she said, yeah, I did. On the day that I lost weight and got to my thinnest, I got in a car accident and I almost died. And I know I associate being fat with being safe. So boom, that began the process of her losing weight. So there's usually a reason why people have extra weight. And when you get thin, it can be vulnerable. It's like, wow, it's almost like more of the sexual being that you are is on display, is easier to find. And, you know, I mean, what's that? Not that I don't, I mean, I haven't known you, so I don't know if you ever even had any weight that was excessive.
Yeah, I did. I was 240, but then I had my surgery and now I'm 186.
Whoa,
but I have to. Well, it's not the way you don't want to be filleted three times to lose 30 or 40 pounds.
No, but how does that leave you feeling? Do you feel more like, here I am, everybody?
No, actually, because you know what I look for, like for a long time, when you lose that much weight that fast, you look like that sick guy who had way too many operations.
I don't think so. You're hot. You're just hotter. There's more of the hotness.
Well, I'm repaired now, so now I'm good. So I just picked another one. BDSM.
Yes.
Okay, I kind of picked it on purpose.
What did I say there? That was an accident. Okay.
Not really. I just was, you know, swirling my finger around, but it did land on that. So, bondage, domination, sadomistic, and denotes desire to explore the kinkier side of your nature. Well, so let's just talk about that. With those kind of fetishes and things, I mean, I always feel like, when I was younger, let me see if I'm going to be honest here or not. Okay,
be
I will.
Honest.
Yeah. So, I enjoyed, I wouldn't say rough sex, but I enjoyed aggressive sex. And I liked to, I used to tell my partners, pick me up and throw me across the room. Not literally, but, you know, naughty, yes. It's just fun stuff. I mean, you know, no gag and ball or toys or anything, but I liked aggressive sex.
Well, I think there's something that's extremely primal. I mean, any kind of sex is primal, but I think there's something about rough sex that represents, as if we're going to talk about it symbolically, that you are wanted, that you're loved, that there's this, it's like there's a this unbridled energy that is ripping through the room. And so I think if we're dreaming about this, there's some part of us that it's almost like I used to joke, it's like if you don't, God, what did I say? It's like a hug isn't a hug unless you break a bone. Like, I want to feel your love, you know? And in some way, if we, as we grow older, become more mature, we have more self-love, we don't need it to be, we don't need to bleed in order to know that somebody loves us or wants us.
Well, or yes, or even, you know, those things become pornographic kind of go-tos because, you know, your partner might not be into that. I think so. That's the fun thing about being young. And by the way, if your partner's into that, even no matter what your age, good for you.
Absolutely. Well, one fun thing about sharing dream, like if somebody does dream about this, that they're being dominated or that they're dominating or having something kinky, there's something really safe about sharing this from a dream perspective. If you are tentative with your partner and you haven't approached this kind of a conversation, sharing a dream is kind of an innocent way to share about it, to see if that does pique the interest of your partner or what that brings up. Dream sharing about sexual dreams, I think, is really important for couples to develop intimacy and to explore broader terrain than we might otherwise in ordinary reality.
You know what, Kelly Sullivan Walden, that you know what that reminds me of?
Yeah.
Just this discussion about aggressive sex. It reminds me, and the gears are rolling in my head, it reminds me of passion and how electric that felt and how passionate it was. I mean, you said the word primal. And I'm going to run with that because when that stuff was going on, it felt so primal and you were in the middle of it and it was just so much passion and felt so real.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there's something about that level of, you know, that our animal nature, there's a lot of people, in fact, that have dreams that involve animals, wild animals. And I always think that in our society, we're so politically correct, we're so buttoned up, and we're so socially acceptable that we've cut ourselves off from our wild animal nature. And sometimes these dreams come to call because they're helping us to get back in balance, helping us to remember this wild, passionate aspect of us and to create some room for it in our lives so we can still hold our head up high in polite society, but have a bit more self-expression, have some more of the colors on our palette be expressed. And I think all of that points toward us being healthier, living longer, being more vital, having higher levels of testosterone and self-expression. It's good for us to have these dreams and to express them.
You know, the last time I spoke with you, we were talking about flying, and then I got so many tweets after you were gone. Oh, you should have asked her more about flying because I fly all the time. I mean, you can speak to the way other people fly, but I fly. I fly with my hands at my side, and the more I spread them out, the faster I seem to go. But I'm never like Superman. I can never go as fast as I want. And then sometimes it fades. Sometimes it fades, and I hate when it fades.
Well, at least you get to fly on a regular basis. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Flying dreams are definitely up there on the scale of, like, the high part of the scale in terms of pleasurable dreams. Because when we fly, it's like we have a sense that we have broken through something. It's like a reward for having done something really good in our life, for having applied ourselves, having a breakthrough. It's like we're breaking through the gravitational constraints of our mundane reality, and we're remembering that we're more than this. I think flying dreams are also about mastery to some degree, even if we don't fly exactly the way we want or as fast as we want. The fact that we're flying in a dream is ecstatic. I've only heard one person share a flying dream with me that wasn't ecstatic, and it was their kind of way of escaping. There was always people chasing them, and their way to escape was to fly, but they kept landing on the ground, and they'd have to kick off again and fly some more. But other than that, mostly dreams of flying are exceptionally sweet, and we can remember, just like a great sexual dream, the way that it leaves us feeling. We can think about the flying dreams and the way it makes us feel, and if we were really smart, we would think about these dreams on a regular basis, especially when we have to make a phone call that's difficult, or if we're going to ask for a raise, or if we're going to, you know, try to do something that's take a bold move that we're a little scared about. We would meditate on how wonderful it felt to fly, or how wonderful it felt to be in that rough sex feeling so desired and having that full expression, and wow, then we'd go march in and say, I demand a raise. They'd go, of course, how much do you want?
Well, so all of you people listening who fly, it's a good thing. I really enjoy it. I mean, you know, and it's one of those dreams that I sometimes wish to continue in that lighter sleep, you know, almost awake mode. You want to keep flying because I love flying. Yeah,
you kind of can. I mean, with any dream, the more we apply ourselves to our dreams and our dream time, the more reward we get. So if you want to fly, period, then just envision right now that you're flying. And imagine if you want to fly differently than you fly. I fly like I'm swimming, like I'm doing the breaststroke.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, so you're like a bird, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm kind
or
of...
Or a dog in water, except you're
exactly.
flying.
Exactly. I'm not exactly dog paddling. It's more like I'm like a mermaid in the sky. That way.
Okay.
But if you want to fly differently, then imagine what that would look like. And imagine you can use your imagination before going to sleep, and like literally just spend a few minutes envisioning what you want to dream about or what you want to have happen in your waking life. Imagine that it's present tense. It's not a want to, it's a present tense reality. Imagine that and then go to sleep and see what happens. And if you do that enough, then your subconscious mind is going to pick up on that, and I bet you'll start flying the way that you prefer to fly.
I wanted to ask you something about when people resort in their dreams to their childhood. Does that equate to trauma and your brain's taking you to a safe place?
Oh, yes and no, not necessarily, but it certainly can. I mean, my blanket statement regarding any dream is that we're all individual beings, so there's not a one-size-fits-all answer about any dream interpretation. However, because we have so much in common with one another, we can make some generalizations and talk archetypally. So in general, our childhood home or where we went to school as a child or childhood playmates, it can represent, if it wasn't filled with trauma, if it was an ordinary-ish childhood, then it can represent what home means to you, home-based safety, security, like you said, a safe place.
Right.
If it does feel like there was a particular trauma that you keep visiting, then in some way, I think these dreams are, they can bring us back to the X marks the spot, to the place so that we can do that dream differently, so we can envision overcoming whatever challenge or obstacle happened back then. Anything that's recurring is important. So remember that. Anything recurring equals importance. And that importance might be, pay attention to this because this is a power place for you. It gives you that sense of warm and fuzzy connectedness. Or on the other end of the spectrum, this is a place where you've got homework left to do. You've got a piece of yourself, like the shamans say, that needs soul retrieval. Sometimes we dream about a place that is a difficult, scary place because in some way we left a part of ourselves, not in San Francisco, where the Drex radio show takes place, but we leave it back in, like, at the scene of the crime, that, and it requires us to go back and recapture that part of ourselves. So it can be either one of those extremes.
I'm speaking with Kelly Sullivan Walden. She is the author of The Love, Sex, and Relationship Dream Dictionary, available everywhere. Let me ask you, I want to ask you about drugs and the effect that drugs have on dreams. Let me give you an example. So when I wake up, my blood pressure medication sometimes makes me tired. So what I've chosen to do is, the first time I wake up in the morning, I wake up at 5 a.m. So I take that blood pressure medication, and it puts me back to sleep, but it almost sort of changes the dreamscape. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, anytime you dream, no matter what you're on, it's still your brain dreaming. It's still your unique psychology, spirituality, your unique associations, no matter what. But it's you under a blanket, you under a fog, you under a bridge. So it's still you, but that you're under the influence of something, so it's going to be a little bit different. So it's still valid. The dreams that you have are still valid. They still count, just because they're a little bit wonky or different. Do you notice if they give you like an unpleasant feeling?
No. They're actually pleasurable.
Then that's wonderful. That's wonderful. I mean, in an ideal world, if we were really a dreaming society, the dreaming societies talk about living life in such a way so as we have good dreams, like eating a balanced meal, not eating a heavy meal before we go to sleep, getting exercise, forgiving people for hurting our feelings in the day so that we can enjoy our dream time, so our dream time doesn't have to be fraught with doing all the dirty laundry that we didn't do during the day. So ideally, we would be unaltered as much as possible in our dreams. But if we need to take blood pressure medication, for God's sakes, then so be it. But it doesn't mean that you still kind of take care of your health as much as possible.
Well, yeah, and it does what it's supposed to, and then I wake up and then I'm fine. I want to ask you about a few other things related to this, and that is people who can't turn their brain off at night, who can't fall asleep, who can't dream.
Yes. Oh, yeah. This is, I actually got to partner up with a sleep expert. We did a whole promotion for the Four Seasons a couple of years ago, and it was great. So I got to pick her brain about sleep, and she said some things to me that were really surprising. Basically, here's some things that might be intuitive. If you can't sleep and you've tried for more than 10 minutes to get to sleep and you're still tossing and turning, then get out of bed. Move your body. Get into an awake position, but you want to still keep the lights dim, and go and read a book if you can. And ideally, you're not going to look at your phone, even though I do, because there's something in that blue light that affects your pineal glands that wakes you up differently. But the bottom line is that go shift gears and do something that's relaxing, that's going to get your mind off of whatever you were thinking about. There's actually a study that said if you are tossing and turning and you can't get to sleep, then journal, if you can, about what's troubling you so you can get that out of your system. And then once you're done, when you feel like you've kind of journaled it out, then conclude your journaling with a gratitude list of 10 things. By making a gratitude list, like I'm grateful I can breathe, I'm grateful I have a roof over my head, I'm grateful that there's somebody sleeping in bed with me that loves me, I'm grateful I have a job, whatever, 10 things that you're grateful for, it literally kicks in the serotonin in your brain after you've gotten to about your 8th thing on your gratitude list. It gives you a sense that you're safe, that you're okay, and you tend to sleep better with that serotonin flowing through your mind. So, and usually don't get back into bed until you do feel sleepy. Don't lay down when you still feel awake.
Well, and I know a lot of people who are listening have to use sleep aids, and I certainly did when I had to get up at 3:30 in the morning to drive to Chicago to do the morning show. And so I used Ambien, but I have to tell you, let's talk about Cialis, Ambien. Cialis isn't the erection drug, is it?
But yeah, I think
it is. Oh my God! No, we're not talking about Cialis or Viagra. Now, what? Oh, Lunesta.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. So Lunesta.
That was good, Dre.
I know. I was going to say Freudian slip, but it really wasn't. No,
was
that was me being me being an idiot. Okay. So Ambien or Lunesta? So I didn't experiment with Lunesta, but I certainly did use Ambien. But I have to tell you a couple things about it. First of all, I had the most erotic dreams ever when I took Ambien. Oh my God.
It was Ambien sales are going to boost right now.
Well, yeah, but you know what? It was short-lived. After my body got used to it, then it stopped. So then when I would use it every once in a while, it would continue. The problem with Ambien is I would take it and I would fall asleep. But while I was on the radio at 7:30 in the morning or something like that, and it's drive time, it was as if the blackboard was erased. And my memory just kind of like, what are we doing? Who am I talking to? What's going on? I mean, you couldn't know. You couldn't tell because I've been doing this for a long time. So I know how to, I know how to cover my ass. But it was really strange. So I had to stop using it.
Yeah, because it does. I mean, there's always a price that you pay for that kind of stuff, and ideally you have to figure out a natural way to do that. I was on the Ricky Lake show a few years ago, and I was on a later segment. They had all these people that had used Ambien and had these crazy things happen, including a woman that got in her car and drove to a store, bought something, got in a wreck, got arrested, had her pictures and fingerprints taken, had gone to jail, somebody bailed her out, and she woke up the next day back in bed and had no idea that any of that had happened the night before while she was on Ambien. And Ricky Lake, apparently, so I think there is something to feeling the mojo on Ambien. She was married, and she got up in the middle of the night on Ambien with no memory of this, set up her own Match.com profile, and started, like scoping out guys on, and she woke up the next day and saw Match.com. What? I'm married.
Well, see, that's what it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know people come become dependent on it. And then the other thing I tried for a long time was Xanax, and Xanax actually helped me a lot. And but only at night. I could never take it during the day because you know, it was just too much. I would fall asleep. But my doctor once prescribed me, because I told him the problem with the Ambien, and he said, let's try a small dose of Xanax to turn your brain off. It actually worked.
Well, that's as long as you find what works. One thing that I could offer your listeners as a free option. I have a dream declaration meditation that you can get on my website for free, kellysullivanwalden.com. And it's like 15 minutes long. And when you're listening to it, before you'll tend to drift off to sleep before you're finished listening to it. And it puts you in a really comfortable, happy, sweet state of mind as you go to sleep. And it also gives you subliminal messages that you're going to remember your dreams when you wake up, and that your dreams are going to help you with X, Y, and Z, whatever issues are going on in your life. So that's another alternative. Try it. Try it if you, instead of Ambien one night.
Yeah, you know what I want to say to everybody, because this report just came out last week, and I do believe it was from the CDC. So those of you who take melatonin at night, knock it off, because here's what they had to say. Taking too much melatonin does nothing. It's effective for jet lag, and then only for a few days. So if you're taking it an extended period of time, it ends up doing absolutely nothing, to the point where it can be a negative. So again, unless you're using it for jet lag, or to readjust to a time zone, think of something else.
Ooh, speaking of readjusting to a time zone, if you're readjusting to a time zone, try practicing getting into that time zone before you get there, and don't keep referring to the time zone that you're coming in from. Immediately associate yourself with where you're going, and set your clock. As soon as you're on the airplane, set your clock to the new time zone and start thinking that you're already there, and don't relate and compare yourself to where, back in San Francisco, it's, you know, Pacific time and not whatever. Yeah. No. So that you can immediately reset yourself.
Yeah. Well, thank God the iPhones now change time and time zones. That's a good thing.
Yes.
Oh, and by the way, before we wrap up, I wanted to say one thing. You mentioned the light from the iPhone. Well, it's my understanding on the new iPhone, they're going to eliminate that light so that you can look at it at night. Yes. So it won't wake you up.
Good to know.
Yes. That's some good Apple stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. But it hasn't come out yet, though.
No.
Okay.
Oh, no. That'll cost extra.
It's not just an upgrade, a free upgrade.
No, you need a new phone. You need, of course. Well, Kelly Sullivan Walden, I love you. KellySullivanWalden.com is the name of her website. The book is The Love, Sex, and Relationship Dream Dictionary. I suggest it highly. Like she said, and I said, I mean, you just go through here, pick a topic, and you shall discuss with whoever you love or, you know, think smells good. Works for me.
I'm going to change the title of my book to The Love, Drex, and Relationship Dream Dictionary.
You're sweet. You're just such a sweetheart. I love you. And thank you for joining us on the podcast series.
What a pleasure. May your sweetest, sweetest dreams come true, Drex. And let's fly together. Let's meet and fly.
Absolutely. Now, you're going to be flopping like a bird, but I'm going to be like Superman until I run out of energy.
Okay. Okay. We'll help each other stay and go wherever we want.
All right. Have a good night.
All right. Sweet dream.
Thank you.